Hello and welcome to the Hall of Fame Movie Podcast. Listen to Matt Levy and Mark Rossi as they put their cinema studies degrees to good use and induct the best movies into their own Hall of Fame. Roll the camera.
And hey, Mark, how are you?
I am surviving. I won't say I'm thriving, but we're here. We've almost made it through the full year. We're almost into 2024.
I appreciate the dedication for committing to this recording, Mark, because you're sitting in a chair upright, but I know you're feeling under the weather.
That is very true. That is very true. But we soldier on.
We really do. And you guys have been clamoring and begging and pleading for Mark and I to come on. And we figured end of the year, 2023, let's talk about some of the movies, some of the TV shows we watched this year. We'll talk about the noteworthy ones. Maybe I'm sure we'll talk about some of the blunders as well.
Yeah, we have to.
There's a little bit of both, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's been a very eye-opening year, I think, in the box office.
Cinema's in a really strange place, and we want to start there. We'll start talking with movies first, Mark. And I've heard different reasons why film's in a weird place. Obviously, we're still recovering from COVID a bit. There were obviously writer strikes this year,
right.
Then the SAG, the actors strike. So now you have a lot of other obstacles from film being made. And on top of that, people still just not going out to the theaters as much as they were. But there were some events this year that definitely did bring people out to the movies.
Yeah, definitely. Barbenheimer was a cultural crossover phenomenon that no one really saw coming. So I think that was kind of heartwarming as someone that really loves going to the theater, just seeing people going out in droves to like two completely polar opposite movies that were both equally fantastic.
Yeah, Barbenheimer was the first major event of the year, although I'd probably throw Mario Brothers as a surprisingly mega blockbuster, but you're right, it wasn't quite the event that Barbenheimer was. But then I think towards the end of the year, Mark, the resurgence of the movies again, where we get this Taylor Swift concert film that also became like a major must-see event at the theaters.
Yeah, I was a major skeptic about how that was going to play out as like kind of the crotchety old man that doesn't want to like have Taylor Swift songs bleeding into my other movie experiences, but from everyone that I've talked to that's seen it, I haven't seen it. I'll just full disclosure there. But from everyone I know that saw it, they said it was just like such a fun experience. Like people were dancing in the aisles, not like in the way of people, but just having a great time singing along like it was a concert. And for like all the talk about how crazy the pricing was for her concerts, to have something that's available for people to be able to see that show for like $20 and under, that's great for everyone all around.
Yeah, I think the accessibility for all the people out there that can't afford a $1,000 ticket, or maybe she's not coming to your city, either one, there is something nice about this. And it's a unique experience. Movie theaters for a while were just movies. And now that you're getting things like that, and even some Broadway shows, which were recently brought to theaters, things like that are unique experiences that are like, all right, that's a different reason to go to the cinema.
Right. And even for people that went to the show, you're getting different angles and different views than you'd be able to get, even if you paid $1,000 or more for your ticket. So,
you're sitting 400 feet away.
Right. Exactly. So it's definitely great. I think having these types of one night events normally that are exclusive in that way, accessible and available to more people is only a good thing.
Yeah, I definitely agree. So let's talk about some of the movies that really hit for us. Mark, I'm going to ask you first, give me one of the movies that you feel really delivered this year.
So, I mean, the easy one to go with for me would be Oppenheimer. We got to meet up and experience that one together. So it was good to finally catch one in the theater together. But what an experience. What performances. Do you think that's like his seminal work now?
I think it's really an amazing accomplishment for Nolan, and I don't think it had some of the over-the-top film technique. I mean, I'm saying not film technique, I'd say story, science fiction, that you generally would get from the Interstellars and the Tenets and the Inceptions, where you're going with these crazy over-the-top concepts. You have an almost biopic, this biography of this guy's life and this classic historical event. It's a very different Nolan story, but you're right. It focused on the story and the characters so well, and you get these amazing performances. I think it's up there with, I don't know about you, I think it's in its upper echelon of films.
Definitely. I think the knock on Nolan for a lot of people has always been that he's like all head but no heart, right? That's like the big knock on him. It's like a little bit too cerebral in his filmmaking and his storytelling. But this was such a fantastic like character study. Also, like talking about filmmaking and telling a story from the perspective of a character, like very much first person, right? Seeing the story through your protagonist's eyes, and then having the contrasting perspective of Strauss, right? When you flip over to the black and white. For me, I felt like that was, even if it's like very obvious and on the nose, like it was an effective narrative device. Like, okay, well, now we're going to see it from someone else's perspective. How did that strike you?
Yeah, and what's funny, you mentioned that it's presented in first person. When I'm obsessed with a film, I start reading all the different interviews or watching right. YouTube clips, and they say the script was actually written in first person, which is,
right. which
they
is
say,
wild.
Pretty unique. Yeah, that's wild.
Yeah. I just like, I was looking at all the different interviews of Robert Downey Jr. talking about when you have a super secretive project, they just print out the script on red paper and black type so that you can't like photocopy it and that's just struggling to read it.
Yeah, that's a real Nolan script. I mean, I think that's how some of the Marvel scripts are too, but like,
right.
And it's super, super secret. And I'm sure there's many movies that come out year in and year out, and the script is not a secret. It's been passed all around Hollywood. Everyone knows the script. It's all about who we can get to deliver this vision and character and story. But a Nolan film is really, we don't want to ruin certain moments of the story.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I think it was really good to see Cillian Murphy in a starring role. Like you don't really see him in the lead role too frequently. Like the only other one that I could think of that I remember was like Red Eye, and he was
with Rachel McAdams,
right? Second billing to Rachel McAdams.
And that's really a under the radar film. I mean, I caught it in theaters right. as well, but it was not really a big in your face film. This, you're right. You usually see him in a sort of supporting roles, and I think he flourished. I think he was awesome.
Yeah. This is like the role of a lifetime. And he was fantastic. The thing that I think was good was that he didn't go for an impersonation or like a Daniel Day-Lewis type of embodying right. and impersonating Oppenheimer's.
Well, I don't think people know like him all that well that
right.
you and me, at least, are not going to recognize a certain mannerism. So just play it the way you want to play it. Play it from someone in that era. Play it with someone with the correct accent. But I don't right. think it's that important to embody him fully.
Right. But such a stellar cast, and it just looked like from when you go scene to scene, there are so many actors that have tiny little parts to play in each scene, and everyone's just like doing such great work. It looked like no one was like mailing it in on any of the scenes.
No, they say there's a certain excellence that's expected across a Nolan set, and they say what's so right. unique about it is there's no chairs, people don't sit. You're always working when you're on the set. And you talk about the ensemble, and there's a lot of first time Nolan people here. And then you get a couple returning. I mean, Matt Damon's right. done other Nolan projects, but Emily Blunt hasn't, Downey hasn't. So it's cool to see some of these people out of their element and doing something completely different. I love an appearance from Kenneth Branagh always. Like I just enjoy. Right. So there's just a really good cast underneath it all.
Yeah, it was great. It was a phenomenal experience. It was such a weird concept. Like I just love that the origin story of it is they're making Tenet, which is probably like his lowest reviewed film, at least in recent memory.
Yeah.
And when they're wrapping up for Tenet, Robert Pattinson gives him the book that then becomes the genesis for this movie to happen. Like yeah. all of that is based off of a personal connection that he made on his previous movie.
It's really wild. When I still think he's building up the strongest case for like director of our generation, and he just keeps adding to it. Like he didn't right. need Oppenheimer or probably even Tenet or even Dunkirk. And he's right. already one of the best directors of our time. And you add the last few films he's done, and you think at some point, should this guy just keep making hit after hit, or should the guy just go out? And he's still so young.
Right. That's, I think, the most exciting part as a fan of his work is that you would hope at the age that he's at that
we
you
can
still
get
have
10 more films, maybe.
Right. Or at least like 5 or 6. And he's taking his time. He doesn't seem to rush through a project unless he's like super inspired by something. He's just making sure he has the right material that he's interested in.
Yeah, it's fantastic. So I agree with you. That is my movie of the year. That's number one for me as well. What would be one of your next films that you'd put on in the win column?
Well, the other half of the Barbenheimer phenomenon, I thought Barbie was surprisingly poignant.
So let's dive in. What are the things that you found interesting, surprising, or likable about the film?
There's so much that's likable about it. I mean, Ryan Gosling is fantastic as Ken. Margot Robbie as Barbie is also fantastic. All the different Barbies, all the different Kens are great. Mattel allowing themselves to be the joke of the film with Will Ferrell as kind of a mother figure when you think about it, like in the end, in the full context of the movie. Helen Mirren just being like the narrator, also fantastic. It was just like so much fun. Like off the bat, it's immediately fun. It's bright. It's colorful. The choreography is great. The blocking is great. The acting's like very good. But it gets really poignant. There's like a great message in the movie that I wasn't expecting to be like crying during Barbie. And there I was like an hour and a half into the movie and I'm like openly weeping at Barbie's attempts to become human.
I think those are all fair points, and I'm not going to poop on your parade. I saw the film much later than most people. I saw it streaming at home. I didn't get out to see the full Barbenheimer events. I just saw Oppenheimer. So when I did get a chance to see the film, I thought the movie had some great casting. I think each of them, as you said, are strong in their respective parts.
Yeah,
I thought the movie had an identity crisis. I thought it didn't take itself too seriously for most of the movie, but then it tried to land several different points and messages. And I think some hit, I think some were hypocritical based on what it was showing. And I think Greta directed this very interestingly. I think it tried to reach a lot of different audiences. And I think it struggled to find who the movie was actually for in terms of audience.
I feel like they found their core audience. I don't think that's your experience. For most of the people that I've talked to that have like had issue with the film, it's usually guys. Because
I think that's
just from my own experience from speaking with people, I just think we don't have like the full shared experience that
absolutely. But the things I didn't like about the film,
yeah,
I don't think it's because I am a man. I think I don't think it did represent women as well as they could have. I think there were certain things that were hypocritical about representing women fully. And again, who am I to speak of that? But then I also found some of the Will Ferrell stuff, which something that you enjoyed. And I'm sorry, I feel like I've seen him do this before, whether it's the Lego or different other movies I've seen him in where he's played like God or he's played the head of a company in this silly, goofy, over the top role. So I don't know. I thought the movie carried on too long. I thought it should have been a little swifter. And at the end, it didn't know how to end. I felt like it was trying to create all these grand life messages in it.
Yeah, I think the thing for Will Ferrell that stuck out to me is that he plays like the over the top God figure. Like you think like Mugatu.
Yeah,
in Zoolander.
Yeah,
this
totally.
Time he wasn't comedically like villainous.
I
felt like that would have been like the easy way to go. And then he's like, "Oh, I like the Barbie Land. I think it's wholesome." I'm like, "Oh, that was slightly unexpected."
I think the movie. I'm so happy when anytime a movie's successful, it's good for film. I love people going to the movie theaters. I'm happy for that. I'm happy that it got people to dress up, go in groups, and make an event. And I love that aspect of it. And not every movie has to be for me. So it's totally fine. And I'm glad that a lot of people enjoyed it.
Well, I think the thing that was great about the Barbenheimer phenomenon specifically is that you're talking about Barbie's obviously a different IP, but the movies weren't based off of anything specifically. These were two new original movies.
Yeah. Mattel's never had a movie based on any of their properties. So this was a big deal for them.
Right. So I thought that people really went out for that and to kind of prove a point, you're seeing the downturn of like Marvel being an automatic cash cow. with a couple of like kind of stinkers this year, as far as box office return. And then Disney as a whole, we had also.
So let's take a detour to that, because this year we got, let's just talk about sort of that genre of film. We got Ant-Man at the beginning of the year, which I think was easily forgettable. What was your feelings overall on Quantumania?
I think that's how I'd describe it as well.
It was fine.
I forgot that I saw it this year until
we looked it up. I prepped and I said, wow, that was 2023. And it was okay movie. It was, I would say, even maybe slightly below average for what Marvel offers.
Right. To your point that you made about Barbie, definitely that was a movie that had an identity crisis on how they wanted to portray everything.
Oh yeah.
They couldn't really toe the line comedically, which is never an issue that they had with Ant-Man 1 or 2 or Ant-Man's portrayal in any of the Marvel movies, but they really had trouble kind of finding the line.
I agree. It couldn't find its footing as well as it did in the past. And that was early in the year. And then we get later in the year, we got Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 3, which I thought was pretty good. I actually thought it was pretty decent. I don't think it was like Marvel's back on its feet, but I thought, okay, that's not a stinker. What'd you think?
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I felt like Guardians 3 was a great conclusion to the Guardians storyline, but I thought I saw it a little bit later into the run.
Okay.
So I saw it probably week 3.
Okay. I actually saw it on a plane. So I don't know how good of experience it is seeing on a 4-inch, 5-inch screen.
Right. Right.
But I actually still enjoyed it for what it was.
I enjoyed it too. But the problem was that I had like 3 weeks of reactions and expectations going into it, and I expected to be completely blown away, and I wasn't blown away.
There were mixed reviews. When I saw it, I wasn't like way excited, but also I wasn't expecting a stinker either. And I thought it was like, oh, it's okay. That was a little better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah. So I enjoyed it.
Expectations can definitely affect your impression of a film.
It certainly does. That's a movie that I'll revisit. Ant-Man Quantumania, I don't ever see myself revisiting.
I totally agree. So I believe, is that all we got from Marvel in the MCU this year?
We also have The Marvels recently.
Thank you. And have you had a chance to see The Marvels?
I have not watched it yet.
Same.
I feel like it'll be fine.
I got a feeling that we'll get that sometime in January or February in Disney Plus, and that will be when I will see that.
Yeah, I feel like
I think it'll be better fine. Than I heard it's, I think it'll be fine as well.
Yeah, I feel like it'll probably be better than Ant-Man.
I don't think that's a tall order. Yeah. I actually was a fan of Miss Marvel, the Disney Plus show, so I'm excited to see her on the big screen, or at least in a feature film. Now let's go over to, did you see the sequel to the Spider-Verse film, which was the Across the Spider-Verse? You get a chance to see that, Mark?
Yeah, that was a definite highlight of the year. Such a good movie. How do you feel about making a movie that's a very obvious setup for another movie that's not out yet?
So that's really a good question, Mark, because I've listened to people's reactions on that, and I actually think it's really brave, and I actually think it's really interesting. I don't think it's a cop-out ending to have it to be continued ending, and I don't think that's a spoiler. Star Wars did it way back with Empire Strikes Back, so I think you look back in time, and film has done this, and I don't think every film has to, but I think if narratively it works, and I think here, I think it gave us a good setup to a third film. It stinks that we have to wait, and there was a delay for the third one, but this movie, I thought the original one, which came out several years ago now, was a good film, was a really good film. The animation, obviously, at that time was very new and fresh.
Right.
Coming to this one, I thought the themes and the story were taken up a notch. I thought there was a mature, as far as perspective and look at things, the themes it dealt with. And I didn't mind the ending. It kind of got me psyched for the third. What were your feelings?
Yeah, I felt like everything was amped up a little bit from the first movie. You had a lot more kind of room to play with. So you had different parts of the multiverse you're jumping to. So you had the opportunity for them to make different art styles for all the different universes, which I thought was really cool.
I think that's what people were expecting with Doctor Strange, and they only went to like two different multiverses. So this movie really delivered on that.
Right. Yeah. Oh God, that was another disappointment. Jeez. I'd forgotten about Doctor Strange also until this very moment, and I almost forgot, but now it's back. But Spider-Verse, like, the storytelling was better than the first one. The like variation in artwork was better. Yeah. You had so many like really great rich characters. Seeing like Spider-Man India in there was awesome. Yeah. Seeing like Spider-Punk,
yep.
Spider-Woman, like there were so many great depictions that
I love. Spider-Man 2099, which I grew up with that character from the comics. So it was cool to see that character fully fleshed out.
Right. Seeing like all these different variations that you probably never thought you were going to get to see altogether. And also just for, again, talking about like representation and how Barbie brought like a female led type of production company and director. So women were represented this way. And now you have representations of Spider-Gwen being like the lead character. And then you see, you have Spider-Woman, like a pregnant spider person.
Yeah.
It's great. It was really great storytelling. Very moving. I loved the movie and the ending is fine with me. Like you were referencing Star Wars Back to the Future. They had a trailer for Back to the Future Part 3 included with Back to the Future Part 2 while they were filming.
I mean, a lot of Marvel movies have done that as well in the MCU. Right. So I think there's nothing wrong with it. It's hard for us to fully judge this film on its own. I think even probably when Empire Strikes Back, did people call it an amazing, astonishing film back then? Or did it take Return of the Jedi to prove how good Empire Strikes Back was? I don't know. We weren't alive. Right. Will 3 be a blunder? And then we'll say, is 2 made better or worse because of 3?
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I think retrospectively, Empire is now like considered the best Star Wars film. But when it came out, it was like mixed reviews, which is hilarious to think about right now.
Yeah, no, totally. And we just saw another one I jumped to before, but Two Towers was a great film, but that was a totally to be continued. So I have no problem with that. I know a lot of people were frustrated by that. They wanted to see a full, complete film, but I knew going into it that you're going to get a part 3, they say, a year or so after.
Right. The thing that will be interesting, as if to kind of go along this down this rabbit hole, is like, will it be like Two Towers to Return of the King, where you get like this magnum opus at the end of it, or will it be like The Hobbit, where you had Desolation of Smaug was pretty good after the first one wasn't very good, and then the third one you're like, oh god,
yeah,
what's happened here?
So and that can easily happen. A lot of films, the second's the best and the third is the worst. So let's hope that's not the case, but that's not too far off. And over in DC world, the DC extended universe, this year gave us Blue Beetle, The Flash, and Shazam Fury of the Gods. And as recording this, Aquaman 2 is about to release. Did you see any of those films, Mark?
I saw The Flash.
And were you a fan?
Didn't hate it.
Right.
Does that count? I thought it was going to be much worse than it was. Putting a baby in a microwave, I can't get over it. Putting a baby in a microwave so early in a movie is just so tough. And also, like, the CGI in that was also kind of tough. But, like, I thought Ezra Miller, they did a fine job. When I say fine, I mean passable. I don't mean like fine as in one of their finest performances. Everything felt okay. The Clooney at the end was hilarious. That made the movie for me. That was like, okay, you guys got a good one in there.
Yeah, the cameos definitely for me were fun. I thought they were definitely enjoyable. The CGI stuff didn't bother me. I know a lot of reviews and people I spoke to said it was, oh wow, how bad that CGI was. Mm-hmm. That never really bothered me. What bothered me was some bad story beats that didn't really pan out. I loved seeing Michael Keaton. Every minute he was on screen was awesome.
He was great.
And did I care for Christopher Reeves being thrown in CGI? Did I hate Nicolas Cage's part? It didn't bother me, or I didn't love those things.
Very computery Nick Cage as Superman.
Very. I actually thought Ben Affleck, who was in it in the beginning as Batman, really doesn't get enough time as Batman, is what I've kind of come down to. I know that might be I don't know if that's opinion people are with or against, but I think as he plays more and more Bruce Wayne and Batman, I actually liked his time in the role.
This was the best I think he was as Batman.
I agree.
He it looked like he was fully finally comfortable.
I totally agree. It's a shame
what the portrayal was going to be. Like there was a balance there.
Yep.
In this portrayal that wasn't there before.
I feel like he fully knew who Bruce Wayne and Batman was and how to portray it, and there was a comfort there that he never had before.
I agree.
And it was only in like 10 minutes, and I was like, I think he's like one of the best parts of the movie, but it's going to be forgotten because the DCEU is dead. Shazam was, I watched it at home. It was painfully boring.
Yeah.
And then I found Blue Beetle to also be a complete snore fest as well. So DCEU is going to go out just like it went in.
Long live the DCEU.
Sorry.
Superman Legacy.
And then as far as other big blockbusters we got this year, let me know if you saw any of these. Will stop me. Mission Impossible, Dead of Reckoning Part 1.
Yep.
We also got the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle Mutant Mayhem film.
I unfortunately did not.
And then we also got Transformers Rise of the Beasts. So those are the three franchises. Any of those you got to witness, Mark?
I got to see Mission Impossible, which I thought was like very entertaining. Felt a little long, which seems to be like the theme in general. That's the theme of 2023, like movies that are 20 to 30 minutes too long, at least. That was another kind of proof is in the pudding that there's like a lot of franchise fatigue.
Yeah.
If Tom Cruise and Mission Impossible can't get you $1 billion in the box office, then there has been a change in how people go to the movies.
And it's not that I'm sick of Tom Cruise or fatigue, because I thought Top Gun last year was phenomenal.
Right.
And I thought the last couple of Mission Impossibles were actually some of the best, Ghost Protocol and the one after that with Henry Cavill. I think like they've been pretty strong lately.
Yeah.
But I found myself pretty bored during Dead Reckoning. And I thought some of the stunts were fantastic, but I thought the movie itself, and I love Hayley Atwell, I mean, I could watch her in anything.
Right.
But I agree with you. I think I had a little fatigue watching the movie. It was a little too long for a part one. This was not even the full movie. And it was like almost 3 hours.
Right. So as if to kind of go and tie everything together to what we were talking about with the Spider-Verse, this one setting up for a part two felt like way too long.
I agree.
And again, I enjoyed myself and the multiple geriatric couples that were there with me that saw the movie in theaters also thoroughly enjoyed themselves. But it's a two-parter. Like,
it is.
How long does this have to be?
It seems like a longer two-parter. It just felt like there was just a lot, and it didn't need to be as long as it was. It was my sort of take on it. So, hopefully we get something better from part two. Is that due out in 2024?
With all the delays, I think it might have been delayed to 25.
I think so too, yeah. I thought Mutant Mayhem Ninja Turtles was fun and cute. That's the Seth Rogen, I think, produced and written film. I thought it was fine. I thought it was good. I thought it was entertaining. I don't think it's the best thing for Ninja Turtles, but I thought it was like a step in an interesting direction with the series. I thought Transformers Rise of the Beasts was one of the better Transformers films. It was fun.
Nice.
It was not great. This is not great film, but it was entertaining.
Yeah. Everything doesn't have to be high art.
No, it doesn't. As far as the other, like the indie was the other, Indiana Jones Dial of Destiny was the other franchise. Mark, did you get a chance to watch that?
Yeah, that it was pretty soulless. What made Indiana Jones, like Raiders of the Lost Ark, so like easily watchable and rewatchable is there's this joy in Harrison Ford's portrayal of a guy that's doing like objectively awful things.
Yeah,
throughout most of the movies, like he's kind of a scoundrel, he's a womanizer. But he is fighting the Nazis, so that he's got that on his side. But everything he does, like you have that like signature Harrison Ford smile.
And James Bond does. And Bond does some of that too, where Bond's a womanizer and Bond does things that he probably shouldn't be doing for the mission, but it's all for the goal and you root for them. And you're right, Indiana Jones, and I did not finish this film. I'm admitting here, I need to go back and finish it, but he seems grumpy. He seems like he should not be riding a horse at 85 years old, whatever. I think he's 82. I forgot what age he is.
Yeah.
He should not be riding a horse. It just doesn't look believable, and it doesn't look like he's having any fun.
No, that's the whole, I couldn't agree more, and that's exactly my point.
And it's
supposed to be fun.
And this is not Lethal Weapon, where they're saying Mel Gibson and Danny Glover? Where they're like, we're getting too old for this.
Right.
This is not that.
He's going out on adventures. Like, Indiana Jones is supposed to be fun. Why is he not smiling until like an hour 20, an hour 30 into the movie? It's baffling.
I think the plot, from what I saw, seemed better than Crystal Skull. I don't think it was cringing.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right. There was a soulless, there was a fun missing. And maybe the sense of adventure comes at the end. I'm not going to fully judge the film just yet.
I never thought I'd be a Kingdom of the Crystal Skull apologist, but here we are. That movie, while not good, he's at least having fun.
I think he is. And it seems like that movie captures more of the essence and soul of Indiana Jones, even right. though when I see Shia LaBeouf swing through the jungle like a monkey,
right.
my brain shuts off and it's like, all right, well, here we are, guys.
Yeah, but at least they're capturing like the joy and hilarity and yes. like the insanity of like the original Indiana Jones films, which is what made people.
This was too unbelievable. I'm watching this 80-year-old man outsmart people and outfit physical people, and yeah. it doesn't make any sense as I'm watching, and nothing is rational about it. And I will leave my grade or my rating on this to be continued.
Yeah, as undetermined as of yet, but undetermined. We know where it's leaning.
So other films from this year, Mark, I'm just going to spit a few more out that were interesting or of consequence. We have Little Mermaid, which came out from Disney, the live action. We have the Dungeons and Dragons film, which was obviously the popular game that's been around for decades, now made into film. We had Tetris, which is the straight to movie based on the video game, the retelling. And you have the Super Mario Brothers movie, which was the big blockbuster hit based on, obviously, the classic video game. Any of those you visited?
So Dungeons and Dragons, surprisingly fun. I thought, yeah, that, like I had zero expectations going into that, and it was really delightful.
Yeah, I think it totally delivered. Is it just a fun adventure?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you have a great cast, so yeah. I should have maybe had slightly higher expectations, but I think going in with no expectations made it be that much more enjoyable.
It felt like a film I had seen five or ten times before.
Mm-hmm.
In different franchises or in different worlds, but it was still fun.
Yeah, there was, you have enough people that are charming and enough things that are slightly different that even though, I mean, most stories, it's basically the same story that we watch over and over and over again with just slight variations. So if you have the right people acting and you have just a vision of what you're trying to do, which is just to have like something that's fun, then you're going to end up having something fun come out of it.
Yeah. I mean, Chris Pine is generally pretty likable.
He is extremely charming.
He's very charming. I think he's a handsome man. I think men and women can agree. He's a joy to watch. And you're right. The whole ensemble, the whole cast is having a good time. And I think there's something kind of contagious about this film.
Yeah. There's actually like a decent like message in the movie too. He undergoes good character growth. It's actually a good movie.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
I can't believe that we're here talking about like the Dungeons and Dragons movie being a good movie. It's actually a
It was good like a solid movie. 7 out of 10. Like it was right. just like a fun time. And it was nothing.
But it's functional as a movie. Like as a yep. narrative story, it's actually functional. The character moves.
Many different characters actually right. have growth in the film. Yeah. And they really have a little party and there's bond yeah. and friendship and family and this whole story about his daughter and the like that. It's really some touching stuff in there.
Yeah. And it's well delivered. It doesn't feel unearned, which is like the major thing when right. you have something that's like a comedy or it's trying to appeal to a wide audience. Sometimes you get to conclusions and you have character arcs that close out that don't feel earned. Nothing felt unearned in that movie. So I think that's like the best compliment you can really give to it.
Yeah. No, that's probably something I don't talk about much is, was that earned? Were they yeah. should they have been able to have done that? Did the audience see enough to get there? And yeah, this right. film really does that. Mark, a film that I had a lot of fun with beyond this, and I think because it's in my wheelhouse, it would be in your wheelhouse too. Did you get a chance to see Nicolas Cage's Renfield this year?
Oh, that was fun.
He's great. He's in full unleashed Nicolas Cage mode. Like they right. just probably said, go full Cage.
Yeah.
And he's having such a good time. I love Nicholas Hoult as Renfield.
Yeah.
It's a really fun story. It's a little sick at times. It's a little darker, but I thought it was just a fun. This is what I like watching movies for. And I think Renfield was a great just reminder of why I like movies.
Yeah. There's something like he's found like the joy recently between like this and the immeasurable, what was
The immeasurable talent?
Yeah.
Weight, I think
the
it is.
Unbearable weight, yes. Immeasurable talent. He's having so much fun in that one too. The movie, did it come out yet where he's like in people's dreams?
That's just like, he's got like two or three movies like coming out over the next like month or two. He's like around.
Right. Like this feels like when Nicolas Cage is slightly unhinged, but putting out good stuff. Like
are we having a renaissance? Are we having a Cage renaissance again?
Yeah, like it feels like The Weatherman. Cage versus when he was just
matchstick men was fun,
right? Like that, like that era where he was slightly unhinged but putting out great different things, and instead of like really bad movies that were like B-tier movies so he could get money.
Yeah, he was going straight to DVD or straight to video
for a long time.
And he's earned his way back. So I had a great time with Renfield. I mentioned Little Mermaid before. I still have a problem with a lot of the Disney live action films. I think it was fine. I think a lot of them are fine.
Yep.
But they're not really breaking any new ground. But I guess if it gets a new audience, and sure, Disney, keep trying to make your money on stuff we've already done before.
I felt like it was fine. Halle Bailey was good.
Yeah. Lovely.
It didn't really break any new ground to me. It was fine. It didn't feel quite as soulless as a lot of the other live actions, so that's something going for it. Other than that, stop making remakes, please.
Just, I know. Like, it's a shame they can't work on new. You create something like Frozen, and people love it. You create things like Moana, people love it. Like, try to do more of that, guys.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Then you can remake those in, like, 25, 30 years into live action too.
After that, Mark, I mentioned Tetris. Did you get a chance to see the straight to, I think, Apple streaming movie?
I did not.
It was fun. Yeah, I do recommend it. People don't know this story. I read the book probably 15, 20 years ago about distribution rights for Tetris because it's made in Russia.
Right.
And this is during a very tense time between Russia and America. It gets a little silly in the last 10 minutes as his car chases that I don't think happened in real life.
Right.
But the movie itself is really entertaining, really touching, and I think everyone should give it a shot. It's like almost a thriller, surprisingly enough. Yeah, I definitely had a good time with it. And then the last one I mentioned that was a monster hit, the Mario Brothers movie, Mark. Any feelings for that?
It was fun. It was like fun for the whole family type of thing. Jack Black is unhinged and hilarious. I love him. Still can't get over that voice, man. That voice. I didn't mind it as much as I thought Pratt. I was going to mind it.
Chris Pratt. It really didn't bother me. I thought it was cute and delightful for the family, like you said. I think they did a good job. I think it's very hard when you have a beloved IP to make something that all people can enjoy. And I think they did that. And like you said, Jack Black singing a song as Bowser, I think it's the one thing no one knew they really all really wanted.
It went viral.
It went viral for weeks.
The charts on TikTok. It was all over the place.
Yeah, I'd say it definitely broke into, it crossed over that cultural zeitgeist that we like to talk into.
Yeah.
So that was a fun time, and I'm looking forward. I'm sure it'll be a couple of years for a sequel, but that was fun. And then just a few other movies that I think some of them were even straight to streaming because that's the world we live in. People, which was the Eddie Murphy film that I got to watch this year. Your Place or Mine was the Reese Witherspoon, Ashton Kutcher rom-com.
Interesting.
Ghosted, which was the Anna De Amos and Chris Evans, thank you, streaming where she's the spy. That was a fun one. And then No Hard Feelings, which was the Jennifer Lawrence R-rated raunchy comedy that we got this year as well. So get a chance to watch any of those rom-com silly films.
So I saw No Hard Feelings as a Long Islander. I had to support Andrew Barth.
Yes, yes.
Former member of the Dear Evan Hansen family, a member of the Blue Polo Club. That was a lot of fun. It was like a different type of comedy that you don't see as much anymore.
I agree.
It had some heart to it, but it was a lot of fun.
It was fun. If you can turn your brain off and go back to a time where simpler films were just raunchy and smaller and sometimes a little ridiculous, but it was a good time because I felt like it'd been so long since I watched a film like that.
Right. It still felt more grounded, which I think is like the world that we live in where we can't stray too far off. Otherwise you start losing people. They're like, yeah, these don't feel like people anymore.
No, it bordered like slightly believable that parents would have to hire someone in this day and age where everyone's tapped to their computers and social media, where you'd have to hire someone to date your kid. It didn't seem so far-fetched.
Right. It didn't seem like so far-fetched of a story or a plot basis. And like the characters again, feel like they stay within a lane that doesn't stray out of believability.
I totally agree. And Mark, the last film that I saw in the beginning of the year was a film called Air with Matt Damon and Ben Affleck and Viola Davis. You get a chance to watch this one?
I unfortunately did not. I heard nothing but good things, though.
Yeah, some really good performances about the recruiting of Michael Jordan to Nike. It was a cool little streaming film. Yeah. Actually, I might have went to theaters and then I just saw it on streaming.
Yeah, I think it was in theaters. There was a brief run.
So that's kind of all I had on 2023 movies. Is there anything I missed, Mark, that you wanted to chat about?
I think we covered all the movies that I've seen and liked and didn't like. I think the only one we didn't cover was like Creed 3, which was fine.
Yeah, I saw Creed 1 and I've been wanting to watch Creed 2 and 3. And I bless you. And I believe this one was actually directed by Michael B. Jordan.
Right. That's correct.
And I'm a big fan of his. How was 3, I guess, in comparison to other Creed and Rocky films?
The direction was good. I just didn't feel like there's a lot of meat on the bone for his character.
And we got Kang as the villain in this, correct?
Yes, yes. The ever controversial Jonathan Majors.
Who's
playing a childhood friend of Donnie Adonis Johnson Creed.
Yeah, I think obviously off screen aside, the guy's a fantastic actor, and I bet he's really good in Creed 3 as the villain.
He was. That's the most unfortunate thing about it is why do you have to be that talented and be a monster on top of it? But I thought their interactions, their chemistry on screen was excellent. He's a great villain. Apparently also a great villain in real life too. There were some of the boxing scenes that they've made the correction from early Rocky movies where it's all haymakers and everyone would be dead to then Rocky Balboa. And later you're like, okay, we're making it look like boxing. And then in this movie, they decided, no, we're going to make it look like Rocky again. And I was just confused because both of these guys would have been dead in the ring.
Wow.
So that's my major gripe.
It's one I'm going to add to my list, and I'm glad you brought it up because I actually forgot about it. Was that earlier this year? Was that towards the, was that winter or spring of 23?
I think it was right on the border, March.
So just doing a quick check here. We had a release date of March 3rd.
Can't believe I remembered.
So that's definitely one to look at. I think actually they already talked about the next Creed. I think they're already talking about the next Creed film. I think it's already in talks.
There's apparently they're in development for a fourth movie. We'll see where it goes from there.
So Mark, that's it on the cinema side, whether it's at home or in the theaters. And then we have the ever growing TV side, which it seems to be putting up a pretty good shot with movies these days. Why don't you start off with your favorites from 2023?
So two of them are connected. We had the end of Ted Lasso, which was tough for me. Big fan of the show.
Yeah.
I thought that final season started off a little slow and found its footing probably two or three episodes in. There's a lot of fan service at the end of the show, but I think that's something that's deserved because you have people that have come along this journey and they want to see certain things happen. And if you've been honestly portraying your characters where your audience thinks it should go, usually is where it's supposed to go. Because it's not a thriller. It's just a comedy. So I thought it wrapped up very nicely. Yeah, that was one of my favorite shows of all time. So I'm glad that I thought it stuck the landing there. On a rewatch, actually, I've enjoyed it more than on my initial viewing, at least the first two or three episodes.
Yeah, I think the heartfelt side of Ted Lasso is talked about, definitely. I think people talk about what a positive influence it has been on so many people.
Right.
And I think you tend to sometimes get that from comedies. Obviously, the creators also did Scrubs, and Scrubs can be very heartfelt as well. And I think it stuck the landing. I think it did a good job. And yes, it might have been some fan service, but I think it was, like you said, earned and deserved. So I had no problem with it. I do think the first few episodes of the season had to do a lot of, I don't know why, it almost felt like it had to do a lot of heavy lifting. Mm-hmm. And it put too much pressure on itself. I agree. The first two or three episodes, I just wasn't sure if it kind of knew what it was doing, but it did find its way. And I think it's a great final chapter. I hope there ends up being some sort of spinoff show,
AFC Richmond team type of show or something like that.
I think we totally could get half a dozen of the characters show up on a spinoff, and maybe Ted himself doesn't show on it at all. But I think there's still so much of a rich world created here.
Right. I completely agree with you there. Yeah, there's I think there's still some meat on that bone. It's just a matter of finding the right story and getting everyone together and getting them to do it. But yeah, I thought it was very well done. I thought the two original songs, like for the last few episodes, like Sam Ryder and Ed Sheeran, were excellent. And the final episode, the scene that always stood out to me was like the full reconciliation between Nate and Ted. It's really schmaltzy. It could completely not work, but Ted Lasso, more than I think any other show, can land those type of really saccharine moments without it feeling contrived.
Yeah.
When they're reassembling the Believe sign, it shouldn't work because it's so corny.
Some of these things are corny enough just to work, and it's the show. And I think the show doesn't overstay its welcome.
Right.
I think the moments on the show never overstay their welcome. And I think three seasons, people probably could have wanted four or five.
Yep.
But sometimes it's smart to go out while the show is successful, it's likable. And how many times have we seen a show drag on a season, two seasons, three seasons, too many?
Right. Right. No, that was to their credit. Their plan was to follow the British type of outline of like you do three seasons, that's it. And then maybe a movie.
Yeah. I mean, shows over in Britain, they don't last very long. Usually get the Fawlty Towers of the world. You get a season or two. And that's kind of what these shows are. Luther, you get a few seasons. It's just how it is. So I think that was definitely one of the top hits of the year. Anything else that you thoroughly enjoyed this year?
Connected to that would be Shrinking, right? Which would be like the spiritual successor to Ted Lasso in a way. You have Brett Goldstein as one of the creators who plays Roy Kent on Ted Lasso. You have Bill Lawrence, and instead of Jason Sudeikis, you replace your Jason with Jason Segel. And you have two of the leading white men crying actors in the world in those two Jasons. And that's how you win Emmys. You find someone, find a white man who can access his emotions and cry on set.
Yeah, it's a film. It's a show that I have not yet picked up. I'm waiting to see. I don't like watching shows in season one. Mm-hmm. I like to wait till there's a few seasons where the show has been picked up, or we know it's continuing, because in this day and age, shows get canceled. Shows, for some reason, just don't continue on.
Right.
I don't want to spend some time with characters if I can't know there's going to be a future to that.
Well, there's great news for you. It's been picked up for a season two.
That should be enough for me to get started on it. But I've only heard good things about Harrison Ford and Jason Segel. Yeah, Jason Segel as well. So that's a show that's definitely on my radar.
And to tie things together from before, in this one, he's a curmudgeonly old man that eventually finds the joy and has a lot of comedic moments within the series, which felt true to his character in the series, but made me wonder even more. It's like, why was he so joyless? And this isn't on him. It's also in like the direction and the writing. But why was he so joyless as Indiana Jones and
so
joyful?
Interesting about that is he famously hates Star Wars. He famously hates having to play, recount memories and talk about it. And he hated coming back for the new trilogy. He wanted to be killed off.
Right.
But he said, Disney, I'll do it if you do more Indiana Jones films, because that's his favorite part. He actually loves it. But it doesn't look like he loves it watching this movie.
Right. It was crazy. I'm still flabbergasted at the decision to not have him having fun.
Yeah. So we got Shrinking. We got Ted Lasso. Anything else that was middling or that you thoroughly liked this year? I think you had one other that you really enjoyed.
So The Last of Us was like another kind of cultural phenomenon because of the crossover between video games and TV and how frequently that doesn't hit. So a lot of people were nervous because there are a lot of people that love that source material, right?
Had you played the game prior to watching the show?
I had played the first one. I had watched friends of mine, like streamer friends of mine, play through the second. So
okay,
I'm
so
like
you
familiar
are familiar. So I was familiar with the story, that I knew it was a father-daughter-like kind of adventure. I kind of knew the basics of what the story is, the essence of the story. And HBO, like they've done with Game of Thrones and shows before, they made this into must-watch television. They made it, like you said, into like a cultural event. And people were getting into it. People that would never play a video game were watching the show and talking about how well it's made, how well it's acted.
Right.
And yeah, I'm excited for what season two is. I know the second video game, the story is very controversial, and it's right. I know people are split on how that, and so we're going to see how that translates. But I agree, they did a phenomenal job with the show.
Yeah, Craig Mazin has done great work with HBO between this and Chernobyl. I mean, after he did Chernobyl, I can see why they're like, okay, we have to find something else to give this guy to do. And this is like the line he has to kind of toe between drama and hopelessness and then hopefulness.
Yeah.
It's such a tough line to kind of toe episode to episode. But you have like legitimate moments of levity early in the first episode before you get your heart completely shattered. And then another couple episodes where you have heartwarming and then completely devastating.
Yeah, I mean, like many post-apocalyptic stories, whether it's I Am Legend, whether it's Walking Dead, whether it's the Twisted Metal TV show. I mean, there's so many different instances of these type of shows where it feels like the world is very hopeless, as you said.
Right.
But you just look for those small, tender moments that make it all worth it. And this show does a really good job keeping that hope alive. And you really do get beat up a couple times in these episodes. Your heart is torn out.
Yeah. The two probably most heartbreaking episodes are also the most heartwarming. So you
I happen to really like the episode. Yes, that was a fantastic episode.
One of the best hours of TV I've seen in a long time.
And people complained afterwards, some of them saying that it was filler, it was a side story, it wasn't about the main characters. I thought it was one of the most brilliant. In 1 hour, they made you care so much about these characters and learn so much. It was unbelievable. And I also liked the episode in the mall.
Oh my God. That was the other one. Absolutely. I couldn't agree more.
And both those episodes are kind of like bottle episodes, quote unquote, as people call them.
I was about to say that exact term.
But it was just so compelling to see these characters before and after and during these crazy events that are happening. And you get really good insight into what they're like.
Right. Having that window into what it was like before all hope is ripped away from these characters is really important. If you're going to spend extended amount of times, especially when you're talking about like Ellie and Riley's episode, because she's very guarded from episode one, but you want to know why. And the key in storytelling we always go over here is to show, don't tell. And then they finally show why she's so guarded. And there's another like great episode.
I agree.
Just the way that they show like the human side of it. It's something that Walking Dead started doing and then like fell away from lean into like the horror of the monster part of it. But the human element is I think what really made this such a great season of television, and excited for what comes out next.
Yeah, I think those were some of the standout shows from this year, from 2023. There were a few other shows that I got the chance to watch. Twisted Metal, also based on a video game, was a surprisingly good time. It's not nearly as good as a show like Last of Us in terms of performances or story or writing. But being a fan of the video games, it's an entertaining ride and has a bunch of nods and Easter eggs to the games.
Right.
And I think that was on, I forgot what streaming service that was even on.
It was on like one of the one-offs, right?
Was it
Fubo or something?
It might have been. It was like one of the knockoff, weird spinoff streaming services. I actually found myself really enjoying the show The Bear, which
still on my list. I'm beating myself up that I still haven't gotten on.
You know, the sell, the quick elevator pitch on the show is, what's nice is the episodes are only 20 to 25 minutes each.
That's
which in this day and age is pretty rare to find, because it's not a sitcom. And they're short seasons. They're like 8 to 10 episodes. And I find the restaurant life and very entertaining. And this show is kind of a behind the scenes of running a restaurant.
Yeah.
It's a quick watch. So I recommend anyone to watch it. It's definitely, I understand now why people talk about the show. And The Boys is another show that I finally caught up on this year. Have you watched any of The Boys?
Yeah, I'm up to date on The Boys. How was your experience with that? How much did you going in? That's my question.
Next to nothing. I just watched it over the last couple of months, and I knew almost nothing about the show. I just knew it was superheroes that basically, if they're not all perfect and good, and there's a little behind the scenes, they're really jerks. Right. I found the show pretty interesting. I happen to love some of the actors. The cast is great. I mean,
Carl is amazing.
Yep. Carl Urban. I can watch that guy read a phone book. I love the accent. He's awesome. But the show gets very violent, very grotesque often.
Very quickly.
It escalates very fast. Yep. And the language of the show as well. So you just have to be prepared for all that. But the show, I understand why the praise for that show as well.
Yeah, they're very brave. I shouldn't laugh. I legitimately mean that. Like they have certain things that they're going to go to that also, like, from a filmmaking perspective.
Yeah,
they do so many things practically that you just do not expect to have been done practically. Like when they drive that boat through that whale, that's a set piece.
That's
they
so cool.
made that whale that they're inside after the boat goes through it. That was a practical set. That's insane.
I don't know how they get away with so many of the characters being so completely similar to a lot of DC superheroes, but
yeah,
it's a great tongue-in-cheek. If you're kind of sick of the traditional superhero stuff that we've been getting the last 10, 15 years now,
right?
The Boys is really a fun play on what it would be like in a real world to just live amongst them.
Yeah, what if the Avengers were all sociopaths? It's basically like, if you want to go elevator pitch, that's it. It's like, what if the Avengers were sociopaths and didn't have everyone's best interest at heart and wore guns for hire?
It's a pretty cool concept. I didn't watch the trailer for season 4 yet. I know it's out there. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of going to go into it expecting whatever they're going to deliver for me. And I don't think it's even the last season. I think they picked it up for a fifth as well. So I think
I think so. There's some more story to tell, even just like from based off the original comics.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah, the comics, there's plenty of material. I also had the pleasure of watching an adaptation of a manga series and an anime called One Piece that came to Netflix. Mark, did you get a chance? Was that something in your wheelhouse at all?
No, it was like in my orbit, but I never dove into it. What did you think?
One of the hardest things to adapt is an anime or a manga, because some things just don't translate to live action. And right. I've noticed most times, more than not, they don't hit very hard in terms of hitting the key story, characters, and beats that you need.
Right.
I think this is the best one in terms of adaptations that I've seen yet. And it's not just me. You see, for the most part, fans are excited by the potential. Now, the show is the manga and the anime is over 1,000 episodes long. So they have a ton of material to go off of here. This it was picked up for season 2. I'm hoping we get 3, 4, and 5. There's so much they can do with it. The sets are amazing. The characters and the casting were phenomenal. And I got people I know that would never watch the anime and would never read a manga really into the show, because it's fantasy nature. It's about pirates. It's on the open seas. It's an interesting concept. It's a really unique concept. And they did a really good job with it.
That's definitely something that, again, it's been in my orbit. I haven't gotten to it yet, but that might be something I might have to move up and check out.
It was one of my favorites. Now, the Disney Plus side of things, as far as Marvel's concerned, we saw Secret Invasion, which I thought was a complete dumpster fire. I thought it's the worst piece of content that Marvel and Disney have put out in the last 20 years. Did you have any?
I didn't make it. I'll be honest. I didn't make it through. I made it through one episode. And that was as far as my interest took me.
And that might have been the best episode. It's the worst thing. I really think you and me, if they had given us a very small budget, could have done a better job. With the writing, maybe. The acting, everything across the board, it's embarrassing that this was shown. And then we got Loki, which I thought was really good. I think it had its peaks and valleys. What was your overall feeling on Loki season 2?
I loved Loki season 1, so I was very excited when season 2 was, we started getting like the trickle of information and early peaks and trailers and things, and I thought it really delivered. The nice part about Loki and the Disney Plus series in general is that they're quick hitters. So talking about like 6 to 8 episodes, most of the time it's like hour long episodes or a little bit shorter. But I just love Kiyoi Kwon.
Yeah.
So seeing him as Ouroboros, I just thought he was perfect. Just like so quirky and likable, and then also just slightly out there. He was a great addition. And Tom Hiddleston and Owen Wilson, they should be like the I like The Rock and Kevin Hart as a duo. These guys should be a duo all the time. Their chemistry on screen as like buddies is off the charts. Like they're the beating heart of that series. Like I know the two Lokis being in love, like Loki and Sophie, that's supposed to be the central couple, but no. It's Mobius and Loki. That's the central couple.
Yeah, I think a lot of people that I spoke to that didn't like Loki season one don't like dialogue overall in film. They watch it for either romance or action or something else. And Loki is very much a talky show.
Right.
And I like that. And I enjoyed that about season two. And I think there were a couple episodes in the beginning and middle where I didn't know where the show was going. But the finale, and not to spoil anything, but it has a sort of a Groundhog Day type, repeat the events, rinse, repeat.
Oh, it's great.
And they did a really good job tying it into season one, which caught me completely off guard that they were going to tie it into the finale of season one, tie it into the finale of season two. And I thought it was pretty brilliant.
Yeah, absolutely. Also, the Groundhog Day of it all is a really good catch. Because I think as someone that's a fan of both Groundhog Day and also like Edge of Tomorrow.
Yeah, Edge of Tomorrow.
Having that as like the starting sequence made me so excited. I was juiced up and I was amped for like the entire episode.
I think one day I need to make a list of Groundhog Day influences in movies and shows. And I know like Rick and Morty has an episode.
Yep.
I know there's a Jake Gyllenhaal on a train or a bus.
Source Code. I was just thinking about that movie today.
Source Code. There's a bunch of films and shows that have played with this whole concept. And I think Loki season two does a really good job in the finale with that sort of concept.
Yeah, definitely. And tying it all together to have like a very complete story, to my knowledge, I think this is it. I don't think they're planning on a season three.
No, I think
there's no need to, really.
No, I think they did a great job with the character. I think he had a full arc. And I think we might see him in future things. It's possible he could return again in another Marvel property. But as far as this story, if we didn't see Loki or any of these characters again, do you think the TVA will appear in other stuff?
There could be some crossover there, but I think like much like we were talking about before with Ted Lasso, like that three season arc being like his story, this two season arc is very much like this Loki's story.
Yeah.
So if they do other things or if they hashtag multiverse him back into the MCU, I don't think they're going to do another Loki season, nor do they really have to.
Yeah, no, I agree. So I thought Marvel had a really good show there. Unfortunately, I don't think it's going to kill it in the ratings and reviews as far as I don't think people are rushing to see Loki season two. I don't think this is Taylor Swift or Super Mario Brothers or Oppenheimer or Barbieheimer. But Marvel needs something big to get people back on board. And I don't think Loki season two is it, even though it was good quality TV.
I think it's a step back in the right direction. So Marvel, to their credit, saw that they were trying to pump out too much at once. So they scaled back the TV series and a bunch of different projects, which I think is the right approach, especially because of like the franchise fatigue thing is real.
Yeah.
But especially after Secret Invasion, they really needed a win of any sort, whether it was critical, whether it was like just fan response to it, even if it's not like a ratings cow.
Right.
I think this is a step in the right direction. They have so much riding on how they can try to land this. And the Jonathan Majors of it all is really hanging high over them with like the Kang Dynasty being the ultimate end goal.
Yeah, so. I know. I heard there's a lot of pivoting and rethinking their whole philosophy on what this phase should be. They really had all their eggs in one basket.
Yeah.
And they're really hoping this court case goes in their direction. Even then, public opinion could be too late.
Mm-hmm.
So you're right. But I guess time will tell with things like that.
Yeah.
But I think a step in the right direction.
One more final mention to Jonathan Majors. Unfortunately, I have to shout out his performance because I thought he was really great as Victor Timely.
He was actually
season two.
Really good in Loki season two. I mean, he was able to mold as Victor Timely into not this dominating force that Kang was. And then when he is Kang and other points, you're just like, man, this guy's good.
Yeah. You've seen him primarily as three different Kangs, and they've been three very different portrayals.
It's fun. It's
just
me
a shame that he's such a goddamn monster.
Well, accused.
Allegedly a monster. Yeah. We'll let the court.
My feeling is if you're that successful, you really shouldn't put yourself in that type of situation to begin with. I mean,
Kevin Feige would probably agree.
Exactly. But I'm going to close it off with two big shows from this year and get your opinion on. Did you watch the Star Wars show Ahsoka?
I didn't.
You didn't. Are you a Clone Wars or Rebels guy?
No, I never watched it.
Yeah, so I've actually told people that didn't watch those cartoons, those animation shows, they probably should skip Ahsoka because it's going to fall on deaf ears. You're not going to understand 90% of the characters and why they are who they are, why they're what their motivations are, their right. decades of history together. And that's a lot to ask people to watch. I think it's like 5 seasons of Rebels and like 8, 9, 10 episodes of Clone Wars. That's right. a lot. People say the MCU does that. I mean, Star Wars is asking you to watch 15 seasons of shows to understand Ahsoka. And for people like me, this was awesome to see these characters come to life for the first time. But that's a lot to ask your audience.
Yeah, I'm happy that it exists. I know a lot of people that were fans of like those cartoons are stoked about the series existing, and then were pretty pleased with it. So
yeah, no, it's I think it's a good thing for Star Wars, but I don't think they should expect to have a monster audience.
Right,
they really should have almost. Not remade the cartoons, but give people a little backstory on who these characters make, more of an entry point, which they didn't do that, but there was no runway. And the last show actually, Mark, that I was late to, and we just got a trailer for season 2. Are you a fan of House of the Dragon?
Yeah. So I was skeptical going into it because I enjoyed Game of Thrones up until it crashed and burned very, very famously in its last season and probably the season and a half before that. So I was skeptical going into it. I thought House of the Dragon was very entertaining, minus one episode where they made it incredibly dark for no reason because they filmed that during the day.
Yep.
And then in post, switched it to be dark.
Yeah.
Which was a choice.
And I have a TV that shows like inky blacks and it shows black levels and everything's like washed out gray and you can't see anything. And I'm like, why did I buy the most expensive TV if you guys are going to film this terribly?
Right. The funniest part is like you have a very good TV relative to most people that are just watching this on like a $500 TV they got.
Right.
Black Friday.
I can imagine how bad it looks on their TVs.
It looks terrible. Like, I don't think that these filmmakers understand that not everyone's watching their show on like a $20,000 monitor.
Right. Maybe it's meant for film. I don't know, but I agree with you. This happened at the end of Game of Thrones, and here they are again filming things the wrong time of day and it's making it very unwatchable. I also thought some stuff, and this is Game of Thrones as well, but there was some stuff here that was graphic.
Gratuitous.
Oh my gosh.
See, graphic doesn't bother me as long as it feels like authentic to how the story had been told up to that point. But when it gets like kind of gratuitous, like in the first episode, just like the death during the birth was just so gratuitous for no reason. I'm like, do I have to see all this like this now?
They want you to suffer as if you lived in that time with them.
Exactly. I'm like, I've known this character for like 2 minutes. Like, why do I care? Why are you doing this to me? That's the issue that I had. I thought the actresses that are playing Rhaenyra and Allison, I think her name is, whatever it is. The two pairs of actresses are great. The time changes are jarring.
Mm-hmm. It really does. It took me several episodes to get into it again.
Yeah.
Because, and this has been talked about many times on the internet, but why do they keep all the men and use makeup and costumes and wigs to age them, but you can't do that with women? And I think that's a sexist thing. And it took me time. Now, I think the actresses were all fine, as you said, but it's jarring and it takes you out of the element and you have to reinvest yourself in and believe that these are those same women.
It just felt like when they recast Aunt Viv in Fresh Prince, and I was like, who's that woman? I don't know who that is.
I go more to Dumbledore, but you can say Enviv. That's fine.
I go back a little bit further. I like a deep cut. I'm like, who's that strange woman standing next to Uncle Phil? I don't know who that is.
I think this show is as much Game of Thrones as any season. And that was going to be the hardest, the biggest challenge is, can you make this feel like Game of Thrones? And with great actors, I mean, I'm going to butcher his name, Riz Ifans. Who's great. Matt Smith from Doctor Who fame.
Right.
Some really top actresses that you have in here. And it was Queen Alicent is her name.
I was right. I shouldn't doubt myself.
Yes, you're right. And it did earn its name as a Game of Thrones show. And I think it's weird that after a few episodes, they just took the Game of Thrones intro because they thought it'd be more recognizable. Come on, get your own intro. Get your own theme song.
I agree. I'd be like if for the Lord of the Rings show on Amazon, they just started using the full Howard Shore like movie like themes. I would have felt the same way. It's like, come on, guys.
Do your own thing. But I'm excited for season two. I think we're going to have a war. I think it's awesome. And I don't know how many seasons. I'm sure. I think they said they're already working on the stories George R. R. Martin said for 3, 4, and 5 seasons. So great. Build it out. Develop it all. They've built a ton of characters and a ton of world building. And I think it's far enough before the world we know. I think they say like, what is it, 150 or 200 years before the something events we like know that. Of?
Yeah, it's hundreds plural.
It's a couple hundreds. So, but it's cool seeing, hearing Starks, hearing names floating around the world. It gives you a little nostalgia and familiarity to the characters we know.
Yeah, you see the connection to the world. That's always like interesting where you have this world building that's happened. It's the same type of thing with like the Rings of Power show, which has a ton of problems, but
tons.
You're like, oh, so like you're seeing, oh, this is like, there's talk about the Numenor and all these different things that you've heard about in name or these connections that were alluded to. It's like, oh, why is they slightly cold towards elves? This is why.
Well, I think we're going to get more of that. And I wouldn't be surprised if we get the next thing being like a giant Star Wars prequel where it's like Knights of the Old Republic type era where it's like years and years, hundreds or thousands of years before Skywalkers, because that's like the thing to do now is let's just go hundreds of years before the characters or a different universe from the characters you know.
Well, to your point, Kathleen Kennedy had like a kind of telling interview where she just acknowledged that we have to abandon the old Star Wars characters. We need to have new characters and actors if we're going to carry the franchise forward. It's like they finally realized like, all right, no more Skywalker saga. We need to just tell different stories. Personally, since like the original trilogy, I think like the best movie they came out with was Rogue One.
I think that's probably true.
And there's a
everything else connection. I think the TV show Andor was quite good.
I've heard that's very good.
That was the only other thing besides Rogue One that I think is worthy. It's like, oh, okay, I can see everything else. Like, was that necessary?
Right.
Star Wars, did we have to do this?
Right. It's like, it's within the universe, right? So you feel the connection to it, but it's all different characters minus like a couple seconds of Leia and like a few minutes of Darth Vader being Darth Vader. So I think going forward, I think it's the right move. They're going to try to just come up with new stories.
It only took them 50 years to decide that.
Right. It only took literally almost 50 years.
So, Mark, that's all I had for 2023 TV and movies that I personally made a list of being noteworthy. I'm sure there's other things out there that I might have missed. Was there anything that you wanted to talk about on the TV or movie side?
I think we covered all the shows that and movies that I wanted to cover here as well. As far as things like looking forward to, I saw another trailer today for Dune Part 2. And
yeah.
I am intrigued.
Yeah, I thought the first movie was interesting as far as remakes go of the old Dune. And I didn't think it'd be this long till we got Part 2.
Right.
But I'm definitely interested to see where the story goes and what happens next.
Yeah, I think Denis Villeneuve is like a fantastic filmmaker. So everything that I've seen so far looks great.
And the cast was phenomenal in the first movie. So I'm hoping that the second is as good, if not better.
Right. That's my hope, too. I mean, they added Florence Pugh to the cast. So automatically it just shoots up another tier.
Yeah, she whether she's in the Marvel Cinematic Universe or the Nolan verse, I think everywhere she goes, she makes it better.
She's phenomenal. She's good in almost everything she does. I'm saying almost everything she does because I haven't seen everything she's done. But everything I've seen her in, she's been phenomenal.
So you can't just assume that she's probably good in those things too?
I got to leave myself a little bit.
Mark, thank you very much. I know you are battling illness, sickness, but you wanted to come on and talk about what you've been watching and what kind of media and entertainment you consume this year. So thank you very much.
Oh, I had to. I'm glad that we got to recap everything and looking forward to another year of a lot of fun things to kind of watch and consume together.
Yeah, hopefully we can do this more regularly again, where we can talk about some movies and shows as we consume them. But in the meantime, guys, everyone have happy holidays. Have a happy new year. It is kind of that Oscar season, so you can start watching all the big movies or the big Oscar releases of the year. Then you can tune in and root for whoever you think deserves the awards.
Yeah, absolutely. Whether it's going to theaters or watching on streaming, just watch things. Just enjoy it. Even though there's like franchise fatigue, we're still in the golden age of content. So take advantage of it.
Yeah, there's too much stuff to, you can't absorb everything that's out there. So absorb some of it, have a good time. And guys, hopefully we'll see you guys next time. Me and Mark will return. We'll talk some more. But in the meantime, stay safe.
Stay safe. Happy holidays.
From Mark and Matt, thank you for listening to the Hall of Fame Movie Podcast. Check us out on Instagram at Hall of Fame Pod or email us at thehalloffamepod@gmail.com. Please leave us a review and be sure to tune in next time.